Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everybody? Chris Block here, Puck Chatter Radio here on thethirdmanin.com, also blogtalkradio.com. Here on this, what day is today? Tuesday. I should know this. Tuesday, May 8th, 2012, 7:01 here in Chicago. No shortage of things to talk about. And to do so, I am so pleased to have back on the show. He is, when you think about the Blackhawks maven, there's Stan Fischler, and then there's this guy. He is the writer, the chief writer, editor of the Committed Indian, also the emperor of SecondCityHockey.com. He's Sam Fells. How you doing tonight, Sam?
Would you knock it off with all that? Jesus Christ. Anyway, good to be here, Chris. Can't we just play Mind Riot for an hour and call it a day?
We could. It's going to end in 3 seconds, the little snippet that's
okay.
On here. Well, I have to do a nice introduction because I'll tell you a story. And I haven't – someone emailed me this week and they asked me why I hadn't talked about this yet. A friend of the program one time was on this show, ex-Blackhawk Steve Ludzik, in the news recently. Not good news either. Someone called me and asked me about it. We're going to try to get Steve on the show. I didn't want to jump on him right away, but – we're going to try to get him on the show to talk about what's going on with him. But when he was on the show, I just sort of nonchalantly introduced Steve Ludzik, and I heard about it. So I've been working on my intro. So we got to hype you
okay.
up, Sam.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to that whole thing, but I get it now. Be professional, I get it. So, all right, I'm with you.
All right, so, you know, it's interesting. I know that Hockey Night, the Hockey Night podcast, they used to complain about this, and it happened to us last week after the show ended with Al Semaglia breaking news. It seems
right.
like every time there's breaking news, the Blackhawks wait until after the podcast is over to do it. It happened last week when Chris Cook, writer over at the Tribune, broke the story that Mark Bergevin was going to leave his post as the assistant general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks and go to be the GM of Montreal, which we can talk about later. If you want to talk about dumb moves that teams are making around the league, don't stop short of Montreal.
And, well, they're pretty good at it, so why should they stop?
But today, just 2 hours ago, the Blackhawks announced that it was Joe Quenneville who has relieved Mike Haviland, the popular Mike Haviland, of his coaching duties, his assistant coaching duties. He's retaining Mike Kitchen. But I want to go back. I want to do the timeline of this so everybody gets it. Okay. Because there's a lot to talk about.
Right.
And then we'll roll into it. So last Tuesday, it's officially announced that Bergevin's leaving, going to go to be the GM of Montreal. 2 days later, Norm McIver is promoted to Bergevin's spot. And then, you know, it took like 5 days, but eventually somebody, and you know, in this case it was Elliot Friedman of CBC Hockey Night in Canada, that kind of put two and two together on the relationship between Mark Bergevin and Joe Quenneville, totally disregarding the fact that Joe Quenneville has 2 years left on his contract, and he's Stan Bowman's scapegoat. But put two and two together and started a rumor that Joe Quenneville was going to Montreal, could possibly go to Montreal. Okay. All right, so yesterday goes by with not really much of anything coming out of Blackhawks headquarters over there. Chris Cook got a quote out of Stan Bowman today that it wound up in the Tribune this morning.
Mm-hmm.
5 o'clock this afternoon, we hear that Mike Haviland was let go. I want to talk very specifically about this press conference because it was a doozy, the teleconference just last hour.
Did you actually get in on this, or did you just hear it?
Joe Quenneville said explicitly that Stan Bowman said to Joe Quenneville that there was dysfunction on Joe Quenneville's coaching staff.
Right.
Joe Quenneville made a point today in the teleconference to say that. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a chance here. I'm almost done, Sam.
No, go ahead. It's all right. You're rolling.
So, dysfunction. Now, Stan Bowman probably shouldn't be one to talk about dysfunction on his staff, but he says dysfunction on Joe Quenneville's staff. So, here we go. Joe Quenneville says, okay, fine, I'll fire Mike Haviland, and I'm going to retain my buddy Mike Kitchen, even though that's not why I'm retaining him, because he's my buddy. But he is retaining the one of, if not the highest paid assistant in the NHL, Mike Kitchen. He's right up there.
Okay.
And, here's my favorite part. This is my favorite part. When Joe Quenneville was asked, he said that he's going to be one to do the hiring. So he will fill this vacated slot now. And he did even say there might be two. This is where it gets really good. Joe Quenneville said, when asked, that he does not yet have a list of potential candidates to fill that position. But he also said that he plans to keep that list confidential, Sam.
Okay.
But he said that Barry Smith isn't on his confidential list that doesn't exist yet.
This is in the same vein as Marion Hossa is on schedule, but there's no timetable from last season. It's in that same seat. Okay. There's a lot to suss out here. So let's get a couple of things out of the way. The Hawks are not good at talking. We know this. They're just not good at talking. So we shouldn't really read anything into whatever's said because they're just not good at it. And they don't allow any real information to be asked or get out there. So let's put that away. Like, that's just whatever they say, I don't buy it. I'm not buying it. Because they're just not good at it. Even if they're trying to tell you something, I don't think they know how to go about it. Secondly, before a lot of fans out there start losing their mud in the streets about this. Whether the Hawks win or don't win Stanley Cup next year is probably not determined by who the assistant coach is. I just want to throw that out there. Like, that really shouldn't matter all that much. I can't name the assistant coaches on Boston. I'm sure you can, but most fans can't, and there's a reason for this. This isn't football, where, like, offensive and defensive coordinators really matter. I don't think that's how it works. All that said, the Hawks have become the Bears. This might not be football, but they have become the Bears, and they don't know, they can't seem to find which way is up, how they want to run these things, and it's very disconcerting for people like me who really had hope that whatever McDonough would do, whether you like it or not, he would at least streamline an operation here, and they really couldn't be farther from it.
Yeah, I want to say a couple things because I think that I'll say and you and I we email and we did last night, and I mentioned something last night to you and I'll say it right now. I'm shocked by today's development, and I'll explain why in a second. But I think a lot of people, and rightfully so, felt and presumed that Mike Haviland was going to be, whenever it did happen, was going to be the odds-on favorite to be the next Blackhawks head coach. That day probably is not coming anytime soon now.
No. This was the least likely scenario that I thought. I thought the most likely was Kitchen would get fired, and then it was like both of them would get fired, and then I thought Quenneville leaving was more likely than Haviland getting fired. But that's just my gut feeling. I'm not basing that on anything. And the aspect of Haviland being the promised, follower here is another. There's so much to this. There's so many strands to keep straight. Like, if he's really the been promised the job or it's been hinted that he's going to take over whenever Quenneville leaves, and now Quenneville gets to whack his successor and sort of jade him on the organization and not have his replacement right over his shoulder, you can't dismiss that. You know, Quinville's not that dumb to know, like, not know that Haviland was the hand chosen one. And I'm not upset about that because generally, this is just something I remember, a gut feeling, but generally when you have a successful coach and then you just try and promote his assistant to the head job, that transition doesn't usually work very well. Certainly didn't work in Detroit. I can't think of an instance where it's really worked. Like, coaching changes, you need to bring in someone completely fresh to it, generally. So I'm not heartbroken here that Haviland almost certainly will never get the Hawks head coaching job. I don't think that's a disaster.
Well, yeah, and to sidetrack just a second on a point you just made, it's very difficult, and it's one of the things that I talked to Ted Dent about at the end of the season. It's a difficult transition because for fans that don't know, and I know this very well at the minor league level, the assistants are hands-on with the players all the time, whereas the coach is not. I mean, the coach, you know, I mean, it's you could call it good cop, bad cop scenario, but that I don't know that that's necessarily applicable, but it's kind of like that. But, I mean, the assistant coach is very much pal around. They're mingling and they're with those guys every single day, whereas the head coach is not. So it is an adjustment for a coach sometimes, an assistant coach who gets promoted to, you know, and it's a lot of reasons why guys who are assistants who get named interim coaches, it is, I think, in the GM's mind, there is that there needs to be that evaluation period to see how that transition does happen. But I want to say this about Quenneville. I think, and I don't know that anybody's mentioned this, I haven't really had a chance to really see what's being said or what's going on, but, and I don't know this, but I think it would be fair to presume that when Joe Quenneville, especially when he got his contract extension, now remember, Joe Quenneville's not some bum off the street. And I'm going to give you, Sam, you know, I know that you have a lot of grievances to air with Joe Quenneville, and I want to give you a chance to do that tonight. But the fact of the matter is that he's got 500 wins as a head coach. This isn't his first rodeo, and he won a Stanley Cup. When he got that contract extension, I do believe that it's fair to presume that he got the power in that contract extension to hire and fire his own assistants.
Absolutely.
And so if you know, I was kind of gobsmacked at the end of season press conference when Stan Bowman just sort of blurted out that, you know, we've got to address, you know, he was upset with the coaching. He said the coaching might, you know, needs to improve. Joe Quenneville came out and basically said, he's like, we need to evaluate this thing. And that's why, you know, it's not like Stan Bowman could come down and say, if he did give Joe Quenneville that power, he has no say in who stays and who goes. And
right.
I think that we have to consider that when we talk about why Haviland's gone and maybe he wasn't the successor. Well, no, maybe he was. And Joe Quenneville, like you're kind of pointing out there, Sam, stepped in and said, no, if something's got to happen here, I have the power and I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah, I mean, that's all reasonable. I you know, again, I don't know anything. And I think people have this perception that I'm tapped into the organization. I am most certainly not. You're probably more tapped into, but I heard the news today, and I took a few minutes to try and figure out. And I don't know. To me, it sort of feels like Stan Bowman is giving Quenneville just enough rope here to hang himself. And I get the impression that what Stan really wanted to do was fire Quenneville after the season. It just sounded like that. That's what it felt like. And he probably, and I'm just guessing here, but it's certainly not far-fetched, he couldn't sell it to the guys upstairs to do that, be it financial or they just didn't want to, you know, whack a guy 2 years after he won a cup or a combination thereof. So it just, I just, again, this is just a bit, but it's like, okay, well, if I can't do that, and I'm going to, you know, let him run his own course here, he gets his own coaching staff, and if he still can't make it work the way we want it to work, then the case is made for me. Then I can fire him mid-season or whenever, and it's not that hard to sell. That's just the impression I get. I'm basing that only on gut feeling and events here, but that's what it seems like to me, because at some point all these guys had to have met. You know, at some point Bowman and Quenneville had a post-season, a post-mortem And I'm sure McDonough and Rocky were in on that meeting, and they had to be. And there has to have been some kind of sit down here, and what are we going to do? And that's just the feeling I get. And if it works, if, you know, Quinville gets to hire his assistant, team comes out firing next year, has a great regular season, well, you know, everybody wins. It's not. I don't think it's going to end up being a power struggle between the two of them. So I don't really. I feel like Stan is kind of almost in a no-lose situation here. The only way it goes, you know, completely balls up is if they, again, this season come out of the gates firing, but then it all, you know, it all goes wrong too late in the season to make a change. That's really the only way Stan loses here, and it sounds like his off-season plan is going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of the, you know, you talk about a no-lose situation for Stan Bowman, you're right, and that's one of the reasons why the speculation, the rumor, sort of the, you know, people saying, oh, the Quinville to Montreal makes sense. Well, I mean, maybe in some, to some people it makes sense, but to the guy that it matters most, the guy that would have to allow it to happen, Stan Bowman, it makes no sense at all, because to make that kind of a bold move,
right,
if it doesn't work, then he's the one that's on the hot seat. Quenville's got 2 years left, and I made this point the day that these extensions came out, Stan Bowman's came out. The first year of Stan Bowman's next contract, his latest contract extension, is the last year of Joel Quenville's new deal. So
right,
not this coming season, but the season after it is Joel Quenville's last year. It's Stan Bowman's first year of a contract. I mean, this thing is all set up for Stan Bowman to win. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I think a lot of this is Joel Quenville asserting what he can when he can. But for Stan Bowman to allow the guy that he gets to fire, and he knows that at some point he gets to either say, we're going to cut you loose and go in a different direction, or we're playing bad and this is a bullet that I haven't fired yet and you're gone.
Right.
I mean, if he lets that go now, Stan Bowman's one step closer to being gone. So,
you're absolutely right. If he had allowed, if that, however close that was with Drew Quinville, you know, is allowed to go to Montreal and all that's gone, and Stan gets to hire his coach, and it's not working in December or January, then there's only one move to be made. Whereas now, like, he's still got that card to play. And you know, and Stan actually has a pretty good offseason here. He's got some room to play with. If he does, then you know, it's basically all on Quinville here, and it just feels like he's letting him get out there, and if it doesn't work, he can cut him that much easier, that much less money is off the contract. So, yeah. And before we go any further, you know, you and I both, you know, deal with readers and read a lot of comments and see other blog posts. I feel like there's this perception around a lot of Hawks that this is a team in disarray. And it might be a front office that has some problems, but the team itself is not in disarray. I mean, we're talking about a 100-point team here that played 6 weeks without its captain. Yeah, it's got some holes. It's got some problems. But you know, this is not the Islanders here. And I feel like a lot of people are making it out to be that, and it's just not.
Well, let's take a step back, and I want to ask you about something that Al and I talked about last week. And you talk about Stan Bowman and kind of playing his cards. At the end of the season press conference, Stan Bowman stands up before the media, and you know, you don't expect a GM. And I made this analogy last week. It's like Brian Burke is not the general manager of the Blackhawks. We don't have a general manager here in Stan Bowman who's going to stand up before the media and say, I screwed up here. I mean, it's not Stan Bowman. He's not going to do that. So I didn't expect Stan Bowman to stand up before the media and say, you know what, I made a mistake in getting this guy, and we probably shouldn't have gave this guy a new contract. You know, I didn't expect him to do that. But what he very explicitly did was put all of the heat on his coaching staff and his special teams. And basically, when asked what went wrong, those are the two things he pointed out. Well, three if you want to say coaching. The special teams coaching, and he said that Corey Crawford needed to be better. I would ask you, you know, and we're going to get into this more in depth, but your thoughts on that when you heard him say all that, how close is that to being true, first of all? And, I mean, was that the beginning, you know, because, I mean, think about it if you're Joel Quenville and you're like, whoa. You know, I mean, Joel Quenville clearly had issues with the players that he was given this year.
Yeah, but I don't. I mean, if there are two sides of the debate, then I clearly side with Stan on them because the pieces were ill fitting, but that didn't mean they were totally useless. Now they, two of them were scratches in the playoffs. One was hurt. I guess it doesn't in the end it doesn't really matter. But we started the year with Steve Montador at forward. So how's that on Stan Bowman? Like I don't. That's just nonsensical. And when I do, I've been doing the postmortem on this season for longer than I've already wanted to, but the two biggest problems were the special teams and the goaltending, and when the epitaph is written, those to me are the two biggest needs, two biggest holes, and there are other holes, but they're much smaller, and those don't, the goaltending and the special teams don't fall on Stan Bowman. I don't see how they can. Andrew Burnett, yeah, he was an odd fit, and it didn't really work, but did Quinville and this has been my point all year, did Quinville and Bowman never talk about him before they signed him? I mean, Quinville's coached him, he knows what he's dealing with here. Is there absolutely no communication between the two that Quinville can be like, well, I don't know that he's going to fit into what we want to do here? And if he did Bowman just not care? I mean, that's where the issue for me is. I mean, do these guys talk at all?
Well, I think with Brunette and Mayers, to me, when those were made, those seemed to me, again, just my impression, my personal impression, that those were signings that Quenneville did have input on.
Okay. And then, then it was, what, less than a month before Brunette was on the fourth line? He's not a fourth line player. So what, did Quenneville not know he wasn't going to fit in all that well with the system? How could he not? There were ways to make him successful on the Hawks. They didn't really try them until the very end, but that's just a screwed up process. I mean, wherever the glitch is in that communication, but figure it out. But if Quinville did have input on those two, then why was he so quick to dismiss the one as it's never going to work? I'm just curious.
I'm just looking at the roster here. I want to get your thoughts on a guy because this is something that we haven't really had a chance to talk about on the podcast. Is okay. Dan Carcillo? We talk about reasons why, and Stan Bowman said it. The some of the players stood up at the end of the year and say, this is a guy, Dan Carcillo, that we really miss. One of the things that when you're looking at some of these other series or teams in particular. Sandpaper, if you want to call it that, is something that gets talked about. The Blackhawks certainly lacked it. I've been pretty to the point and on the record about Carcillo. I think he's too high of a risk.
A reward.
Yeah, I mean, is that Dan Carcillo, 2-year contract? I mean, I know that you've written about it, but your reactions when it happened, and what do you thought? Your thoughts about how it works going forward?
I have no idea. it doesn't make any sense to me now. It didn't make any sense to me at the time. The only thing I can guess is that there were a lot of stories early in the year when he was healthy about how much character and vibrance he brought to the room, which is something they constantly talk about. So if that is true, and he makes it a more fun work atmosphere for people, I guess that can't be outright dismissed. I don't know. It's grabbing at straws. As far as on the ice, whatever you think, you're going to get out of Dan Carcillo, they're getting out of Andrew Shaw and more. And Andrew Shaw can move. So I don't know what on the ice he's... that's the whole sandpaper pest thing. I don't buy that. I mean, I what they need are wingers who can win the battle on the boards. And that's a certain kind of toughness in sandpaper. That's not Dan Carcillo. I mean, the Kings aren't doing this because they're annoying people. The Kings are doing this because they're outworking and bigger than other teams. I don't know where Dan Carcillo fits into that. I mean, do we really think he's going to drive entire teams nuts and they're going to constantly march to the box? Well, Andrew Shaw was driving the Coyotes nuts before the puck even dropped. So I have no idea where or how Carcillo fits. I mean, I get it on in theory. A pest who can actually play a little bit and fill in a game or two on the top six if you need him to. But what I saw was the player who either A, fell way too in love with his offense that he really didn't provide all that much of, or B, was simply, you know, a detriment out there. He's out there trying to hurt people. I mean, I watch Hawks fans rant and rave about Rafi Torres while wearing the Dan Carcillo jersey, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm totally with you. Let's. I want to make. You know, you talk about players talk about the. You know, bringing something extra or a little different to the room. I think maybe the reason why a lot of guys say that, and maybe they miss it, and you know, those characters like Burrish and Versteeg and guys along those lines, is because, and we've heard it. I mean, Victor Stahlberg has come out and said it. Even Patrick Kane has alluded to it on time. You know, the captain, as great as he is, and I'm not trying to knock Jonathan Toews at all, but there's a tone that he sets in the room that is overly serious and not fun, maybe, is the complaint. And
right.
Maybe there is this thought that that is important to kind of – to balance. Not that Toews is trying to, you know, stomp on anyone's fun in there, but maybe when your leader is – a certain way that maybe you need to sprinkle the rest of that room with some guys that bring a little different atmosphere to the room. I guess
and
I could see that.
You know what, I get that, and I don't think that's to be ignored out of hand, because I think that probably does play in sort of a, you know, in a way. But you don't need Dan Carcillo to do that. There are plenty of goofballs out there you can find who can actually contribute. Hell, Adam Burrish has become a better player in Dallas. He's available. You want him on your fourth line, he can do the same thing, you know, and give Kane a place to puke at night. Like, I don't, you know, I mean, I just don't, like, that. I get that factor, but you can find that factor with people who can, like, actually play.
All right, shifting gears a little bit here to, you know, we want to continue the talk about guys being a pest and playoff sandpaper and getting under player skin. Friend of the program, Al Samaglia, this week, according to sources of his, floated basically a rumor, speculation, that there's internal discussion and debate about moving Dave Bolin this summer. Obviously, the pull here, the Blackhawks would have to get a lot in return in order to do this. I mean, but I know that you're a Dave Bolin guy.
Absolutely.
And this would upset you greatly. And I want to make this point before you start. When Dave Bolin's on his game, I love Dave Bolin. And I don't care where he plays, if he plays second or third line, when he's on his game, I love Dave Bolin. But he's not on his game enough. But I know that you're a big Dave Bolin guy, and I want to give you an opportunity here to make the case for not either doing this in a certain situation or not doing it at all. And what problems it could cause.
I'm not going to disagree with you about him not being on his game far too often. You know, the guy does sort of float through parts of the regular season, and no one can tell you different. You know, sometimes maybe we can blame it on injuries here and there, but there are nights, and there's too many of them, where, you know, in October through April, where Dave Bolin just doesn't look all that interested. That said, I don't understand the idea that we're going to trade, you know, one of the better number three centers around for a number two center and just move the hole on our team to a different spot. I mean, I don't think that makes you any strong. You know, if you want to be strong down the middle, you're just kind of pushing it around there. Now, I don't know what names have come up in return for Dave Bolin. Some people have mentioned Jordan Staal, and that's not to be dismissed. Because I think Jordan Staal is a better offensive player than Bolin is, while giving you the same, defensive responsibility. And then you can sort of make up your third and fourth center. They don't have to be their usual roles. I get that. But, you know, the Hawks aren't so strong down the middle that they can afford – they think they can lose one here. Marcus Kruger is not a checking line center yet. I don't think he's ever really going to be. He doesn't have the, as McClure would say, doesn't have the ass or the snarl to do that role. He's even worse at faceoffs than Bolin is. You know, there's a couple of kids. I know you're kind of high on Deneau, who finished the year in Rockford, but let's be fair, he's nowhere near ready to contribute to the Hawks in a serious way yet. I mean, I don't think Dave Bolin is untouchable. I don't know that anyone on that roster outside of Dave should be considered untouchable, or Seabrook. But it'd have to be a very impressive package coming the other way that solves more than one problem, because otherwise you're just shifting it around like a game of whack-a-mole, you know, and that doesn't move the team forward.
I agree with that. Now, I want to talk about Deneau, because I got a lot of emails after last week's show when I talked about Deneau, and I want to kind of make this point. I do believe that Philip Deneau is very close to being a Blackhawk. Now, the problem is that he's not, you know, he could have a great summer in the weight room, put on a little bit of weight, but that's the main thing that he needs. And if he could do that, he's just like, although Mark McNeil is not going to make the Blackhawks next year, you could forget about it. But Deneau, if he can have a great summer, he is very, very close. And like we saw with Nick Leddy, and I'm not agreeing with it. I'm like, you know, I was very against pushing Nick Leddy. It's just that after the fact, we found out that there was a very good reason why, at least they felt that they had, for pushing Nick Leddy in too soon, is because they probably had it already knew that Dale Talon wanted Brian Campbell and that deal would be on the table in the summer. So they rushed Nick Leddy into a spot. This is not that different of a situation. Dave Bolin doesn't have an enormous contract, but Philip Deneau will be ready. If he's not ready this coming season, he'll be ready the following year. And Philip Deneau's spot is Dave Bolin's spot. I don't know that at the end of Dave Bolin's five-year contract, which is in another 2 years, I don't know at the end of his deal whether the Blackhawks are sitting there and saying, okay, a guy who's had a history of back injuries and concussions, he'll probably never be anything more than a third-line center, at least here in Chicago, if we're contending for Stanley Cup. I think at a certain point, maybe they sit back and say, when can we get the most for Dave Bolin, considering that we have this kid Philip Deneau coming? And I do believe that Philip Deneau is that guy for that spot. Offensively, I don't think he can be your second-line center, but he's going to be a damn good checking-line center. And then you also have to consider, like what the Hawks did with Leddy, if it's a situation where he either makes the Blackhawks or goes back to junior, how much better can he get in junior? And are they so excited about him, like they were with Nick Leddy after prospect camp 2 years ago, that they say, you know what, We'll struggle with him early, but by the end of the season he'll be exactly where we expect him or hope that he can be, because
which is kind of what they did with Kruger this year, although playoffs kind of put a stop to that. But at the end of the season, Kruger was playing very well.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that, and I just want to make that clear. I'm not advocating it. I think in my world, if I had the decision to make, I would send Deneau back, because I think, you know, as good as he is defensively and the fact that he plays in the queue, I don't think it would do him any harm to go back there and work on his offensive game and get a little bigger, stronger, and play. I don't think it hurts him at all, but I just, understanding the way that these guys operate, I think that you definitely have to consider, and we'll find out in prospect camp. I think we'll pretty much know, you know, by mid-July where they're leaning here, but I think you have to consider that they're looking at Deneau. I mean, I know that they're excited about him. So, I mean, you and that's everybody. So,
right.
I mean, I think it's something you do have to consider.
Well, you know, and that's fine. And Bolin is, and I love the guy, but he is the type of player on a cup contender that other teams will overvalue. I think, like, you know, how many Red Wings or, you know, other players of teams like that have gotten fat contracts from other teams and just didn't really ever live up to it away from that team. You know, like, I bet there are a lot of teams, mid-level teams, that look at Bolin and think, oh, he can be our second-line center and we can pay him $5.5 million a year. And I'm with you. I'm not convinced he is that player. Now, maybe he does get second-line minutes, consistent power play minutes, he put up more points than we've seen here. But, I mean, I get why you'd look at it. But I think it only should be looked at, not forcefully moved through. You know, if they get a package that wows them, by all means, you should always do something you think is going to improve the team. But I wouldn't do it just to do it. And I don't, you know, again, I haven't heard who's coming. You know, if it's just for someone like, I don't know, Derek Roy, you know, that's the scenario that I'm talking about. That's just moving one problem out for another, unless Deneau is ready to at least be serviceable in that role. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. We'll just have to find out. I will say this. It's probably easier to be tossed in the deep end at forward than it is at defense, like Leddy was. Not by a huge margin, but by a little margin.
I mean, look at the Flyers. I mean, you're talking about top end draft picks at 18, 19 years old. But
right.
That Flyers team, when you look at guys that have contributed all year, they're still in the playoffs and contributing. There's a lot of young guys on that team.
Right.
And Deneau. You know,
he's a first round pick.
I mean, he's the guy you got for Troy Brouwer. So it was a lower round pick from Washington. But, you know, I remarked to somebody, I'm like, I cannot believe that they got that kid there. Because, and I said this last week, I said it before, the offense is not comparable. And maybe the offense will come around in the end. But when I watch him play, the way that he hunts the puck, he looks exactly like Jonathan Toews. And
right.
If you have Jonathan, you know, have that type of player, you know, and you could put him in the middle on your checking line, I think you're pretty damn good. And I think
if he becomes a vintage, you know, Sammy Paulson in Anaheim, I don't think anybody's going to complain. You know, that's a very valuable piece to have. And you know, maybe you don't get the scoring off your third line that you once did, but I suppose there are ways to get around that. You know, I don't know that you're required to have third line scoring as much as the Hawks have to be a great team. But you know, those, you know, we'll see. They can't, if they decide to do that, then they can't miss here. You know, they can't trade Bowen and, you know, turn over the reins to Deneau and then not have it work, because then they're just going to be in the same problem they were before.
And I agree with you, because there's really nobody else in line. Marcus Kruger impressed me at the end of the season. He does little things on the ice. You could tell he's a very intelligent player. He thinks the game well, but he's so small and he gets hit so much. And I don't know that he can handle the rigors of a full season, getting a lot of minutes. And, you know, again, he's still young. He's still learning the NHL game, but I didn't see anything on him in the second line center position that really excited me at all. I don't think he's a checking line center, so that puts him at your fourth line. So where else is it coming from? I asked about Brandon Peary, and everybody can listen to the interview that's on the website. I led off a question with Ted Dent, the head coach of the Rockford Ice Hogs, and I, you know, basically saying that, you know, Brandon Peary is pretty close to making that next step. And it was basically dismissed by the head coach of the Rockford Ice Hogs.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what they think of him, but offensively, the kid's got talent. I mean, he's got lead feet, and that's been something they've been working on, and it's competing night to night. So, I mean, that's a problem if that's the guy you want to plug in on your second line, which is that's if he's to make it to the NHL, that's where he's got to go.
Right.
But I don't know where he stands with them right now. So you're right. I mean, if you're going to make the move, you absolutely cannot miss here.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're on the same page as Marcus Kruger. I like him, but in every category that I try to look at him as, or the potential candidate for whatever spot, he looks a little short for all of them. Just a little like you know, I see a guy who does all, as you say, the little things right, but I don't see a gifted playmaker there. You know, I see a guy who makes the right pass most of the time, but I don't see him breaking things open with his vision. I don't see a great finisher. You know, I mean, he gets his goals, but I don't ever see 20, 25 goals coming from him. You know, I see a defensively positioned right, you know, a guy who's always in the right spot but doesn't always have the strength to make that count. You know, like everywhere you sort of look at Kruger and project him, he looks a little short for that spot. He's probably a third-line center on an okay team. That's probably what he is. You know, and that's the center, because I'd be looking to move him, because that's the one that teams would still, you know, he's got a low contract and he's young, and you could, you know, he'd have to be part of a package, but not like they don't have other pieces they need to be moving here.
Another rumor that, you know, has been talked about in a few places, and Ryan Suter.
I love this one. This one's my favorite.
Ryan Suter, who's an exceptional defenseman, but he's now being linked. People are speculating about Ryan Suter going to the Chicago Blackhawks potentially, and Ryan Suter, of course, going to be a free agent. His uncle Gary Suter played for the Chicago Blackhawks. Unless Joe Quenneville has some sort of a plan, or is Stan Bowman, who's apparently filling out the lineup card, putting Patrick Kane at center.
Right. That's a whole other discussion.
Unless they have some sort of grand plan where they're always going to skate 13 forwards and 5D, I don't see the need or how you're going to fit. I mean, forget about the money, Ryan
right.
Suter, and effectively use Ryan Suter. Again, unless you only plan on playing two defense pairings and spotting a fifth guy, I just don't see where it makes any sense. And then you compound it with the fact that you're going to have to get in a bidding war for that guy. And the reason why – and Ryan Suter's a better defenseman than Brian Campbell, but it creates the same issue in that you have all this money tied up in your D and you can't improve other areas of your team, especially at the end of the season when you need to, because you have so much money locked up there. Ryan Suter to the Blackhawks, your initial thoughts when you heard it, and take it away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on my EA NHL 12, it sounds great. But in reality, I'm with you. It doesn't add up. And I'm not – here's my thing with Ryan Suter. I think he's a great defenseman. But I will say that in games I've seen either – Suter or Weber play without the other, you know, it's not very impressive. Now, it's a very small sample size. These guys have missed, like, 8 games combined in the past 2 years or whatever. But there is a small fear that, like, they add to each other's games in ways only those two can. But out of the way, Suter's still a great defenseman. He's great in the Olympics. But for what he's going to cost, you know, I have to admit, I laugh every time I think about, well, last summer $7 million was too much to pay for a second pairing defenseman, but this summer $7.8 isn't. You know, I mean, that doesn't work. And if you do that, if you sign Suter, to me, well, then you're shipping out Nicoletti, because I don't see, you wouldn't saddle Ryan Suter with Nicoletti and limit his offensive game. That doesn't work. And Suter would make a far better partner for Dylan Olsen than he would Nicoletti. And they're not going to just sit there and restrict Nicoletti to the third pairing for the next 5 years. And they're not going to do that. You know, there are other defensemen out there who solve the problems at a far cheaper rate. You know, I've been daydreaming about Matt Carl ever since the Hawks, you know, faded out. There are others. I get it. Stan wants to make a splash. You know, he really wants to show people that he's going for it this time after sort of sitting on cap space last year. Maybe he thinks, you know, maybe it's part of the, I'm going to Q-proof this roster, and if he still screws it up, then it's going to be real easy to fire him. I don't know. You know, on paper, without the cap concerns, yeah, great. Who wouldn't want Ryan Suter? But, it doesn't add up for me. Unless he's going to give them some sort of discount, which obviously isn't going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And again, I mean, the only way that it can happen, in my mind, the only way that it makes any sense, and I don't expect this, but again, it's just trying to, like the rumor Suter to Chicago, I will try to reach to make sense of it. Unless there's a second deal in which you're going to trade Duncan Keith, which, again, I'm not endorsing, but again, I'm trying to make sense of this.
Right.
And I don't think that that's going to happen for the number one reason, and Duncan Keith, he needs to be better. I don't think he needs to be marginally better, but he needs to be better. But I think he can be better. But if his cap hit, if they don't change the way they configure cap hits, and that's another story, and we won't even know that until after Ryan Suter signs. So, but
right.
if they don't change that, then I mean you're talking about Ryan Suter at $7 million. Or Duncan Keith at 5'3", or whatever he's sitting at. So,
right.
I mean, again,
it's running in place again. It's the same thing as trading Bolin for a number two center and having all in three.
I mean,
so
I'm trying to make sense of it, and in no way I look at it can it make sense. So it's just, I think the rumor itself is just stupid.
I think maybe he's just putting that out there so, you know, Hawks fans will get off his case. I don't know, but it doesn't work. And if they do it, then I don't know why Nicoletti is here. And but is Stan ever going to admit, get rid of his pet? I doubt it. I guess I see it. I guess if you could keep the years limited, but then he's going to want a no movement clause. So what's the point? It doesn't work. It doesn't add up. It's nice to think about, I guess, but. You know, Parise would make more sense than Suter, wouldn't he, for the same money?
Well, we talked about it last week. You don't know what's going on with Marian Hossa. You hope that he gets better. You assume that he gets better. But when will he be better by?
When are you going to know?
Jeremy Morin missed 10 months with a concussion. A concussion, whiplash. You've got Marian Hossa with rumored to be the same, a similar injury, and they're all different, but you just don't know. Will you know on July 1st? No. You could use that money if he's going to go on long-term IR, but the Blackhawks have never wanted to do that.
And no one's ever found out why. You're spending that money anyway.
Let's go back. I want to go back to the defense for a second because, there are issues there. You have Steve Monitor, who's got a bad head. So you got Keith Seabrook, Jamerson Leddy, Olsen Monitor, Ladd and Stanton. We assume that Lopesto, maybe they'd sign Lopesto just as a reserve guy. O'Donnell's gone.
I don't think Lopesto would sign here, even if they wanted.
Probably not. But, I want to talk about Nicklas Hjalmarsson because 2 years ago, Sam, you and I, before the Stanley Cup season, I guess that'd be three now, we talked about Nicklas Hjalmarsson being one of the more important guys on the team that year. Prior to the past two seasons, we talked about Nicklas Hjalmarsson wanting to see improvements in his game, taking a next step. But in some ways, I think that that's happened, and in a lot of ways it hasn't. When people talk about trading a guy, they talk about trading Nicklas Hjalmarsson. I would kind of hold off on that just because he's one defenseman that gives you something different than all of the other defensemen that you have. And I don't think that can be ignored. But let's start with your thoughts on Hjalmarsson, where he's at, and your overall impression of where he's at this point in his career.
Well, I sort of wrote a scathing review of him today because I think it's been 2 years of not moving forward versus the 1 year of impressive play we have. So to me, we have more evidence of him just not being what we want for that money than we do of him being so. That said, looking just at his numbers, which a lot of people pointed out in the comments as they were right to do, his numbers don't look as bad as your eyes tell him he does. So I don't know where to go with him based on just that. Now, what they do with him, to me, is completely based on what they think Dylan Olsen is now and what they think he's going to be and when they think he's going to be it. Because if they're high on him and they think he can, really be a second-pairing defenseman sometime soon, then Hjalmarsson's got to go because you're not going to pay a third pairing defenseman $3.5 million. Even if it's not the beginning of next season, you find someone to stay with Leddy until Olsen is ready and can be moved around a bit. If they don't think Olsen's ever going to be anything, well, they don't really have anyone else, so I guess Hjalmarsson has to stay. But, you've been asking him to be this sort of rock presence on the second pair for 2 years now, and he couldn't do it last year, and he couldn't do it the year before when Brian Campbell was probably playing the best hockey of his Blackhawks career. So when is he going to do it?
I think there's two problems that when looking at Hjalmarsson, and I advocate fans of any team, but Blackhawks fans, since that's what we're doing here, to want more out of their team and their players all the time, to demand more, to demand excellence. I mean, I think that's in whatever
right.
you do, that's probably what you're striving to do, I would think, if you're any good at what you do. So I think that you should demand that. I think you should demand more out of Nicklas Hjalmarsson. But I'll say this, and I don't know that it's necessarily a defense of Nicklas Hjalmarsson. It's just sort of my evaluation of the thing. If you really look at him, what's I've said this, what is your probably the main complaint I have of Hjalmarsson? I have to take a step back and look at it, because my main complaint of him is the way that he moves the puck. And that first pass out of the zone, taking a look, taking a couple of strides, moving with the puck while he has it, just decision-making with the puck. Now that's a big deal, especially on the team that he plays for.
Mm-hmm.
However, think of who he's played with while he's here. I mean, he's played with Brian Campbell, and if Brian Campbell's on the ice, who has the puck? Brian Campbell.
Right.
And I don't want to go into it, but, I mean, that's just what I just said there. If you want to, that's what was missing in a big way, one of the things from the Blackhawks this year. But now he's with Letty. For the most part, he was with Letty. He was also with Brent Seabrook. When he was with Seabrook, who was carrying the puck? Who was moving the puck? It was Brent Seabrook. When he's with Letty, they want Letty to develop into that guy. I think if – this is just my thought. If Nicklas Hjalmarsson gets traded and goes somewhere else where it's a level playing field, I think Hjalmarsson – one of the problems with him and the way people look at him is he's sort of stuck in this position on the Blackhawks of no less, no more.
Uh-huh.
And – in that spot, when you have fans that are, and I'm guilty of it, we're all guilty of it, of looking at a player on the second or third pair, and when he makes a mistake, kind of going, oh, I can't believe he made that mistake. Well, he's on the second or third pair because he's not good enough as the guy, as good as the guys in the first pair. So, of course, he's going to make more mistakes than those guys. You say, well, quality of competition or whatever, but he's still not as good as those guys, so he's going to make more unforced errors than those other guys. So I think that's one thing, but I do believe that that's a big part of it. I think if he were to go somewhere else where it'd be a level playing field and he'd be moving, I think he would improve that area of his game. But where he's at on this team, he's pigeonholed into this spot where I don't think he's going to get any better. But if you get rid of him, it's just like with Dave Bowen, if you get rid of him, I don't think he's as bad in his own zone as people try to portray him to be. You get some intangibles there, the block shots, of course, but I do think that he competes. I think he's smart. I think he tries to do too much sometimes. And I think it's in his head this year when he was playing with Letty was that he was trying to do too much.
Right.
That's just kind of my thought there. I think that, maybe we're a little unfair with him sometimes, but, at the end of the day, it's got to be incumbent on him to improve, and we haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I just, I get what you're saying, but, I feel like he's always going to play with a defenseman who's better with the puck than he is. And he's still going to face some pretty hellacious forechecks in the Western Conference. I think he'd probably be better in the East. I don't trust him to not make it's not, mistakes are fine. Everyone makes them, but it's the killer turnover or blind pass that makes. And if you're on this team, especially now that we know Quinville's sticking around, and then the way the Hawks want to play, well, I don't care how much you handle the puck or you don't, you got to be able to play with it. And I just don't see. Well, I haven't seen enough improvement from Hjalmarsson to make me think that he's going to be able to consistently, and he could get some help. He's certainly not helped by this all three forwards at the red line method that the Hawks seem to employ. You can make it easier on him to give him a few more easier options. But again, at a different contract with a different lineup at the moment, yeah, I'd say stick around, but it depends what they want to do, who they want to partner with Nicklas Letty. Do they have someone from outside the organization they're going to go get? And what do they want to do with Dylan Olsen? And to me, I it sounds like they want to go get someone to play with Letty, and I think they have a pretty good feeling on Olsen. I know they want to start him on the third pair, which is exactly where he should be, but I would have to imagine they envision him being on the second pairing at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I think the issue as far as where Olsen plays is he's better on the right side, and that seems to be where they want Nick Leddy to play. So unless they get that out of their mindset, I mean, I've always thought, and just looking at the two, watching the players play, that's a future pairing, you know, Olsen
Correct.
And Leddy. But you have two guys that are better, at least perceived to be better, on the right side. So you have to sort of figure that one out. I want to get back. We're going to wrap up here in just a little bit. I know that there's a game going on. I don't know the score of the game, but I know there's a game going on.
That's 2-1 Devils. Got it right here, actually.
All right, so you're not.
No.
In today's teleconference, Joe Quenneville did speak of something that he needs to be better at, and I will transition this into a forum for you, Sam Fels. But he talked about watching Washington and watching the Rangers in the playoffs, and he talked specifically about where Joe Quenneville himself admitted that he needed to be better going forward, which is distribution of ice time. And I guess, I mean, I thought all along that Joe Quenneville, 500 wins, Stanley Cup, people claim that he's a Hall of Famer, would know this, but basically he insinuated you have to earn the time that you get. I know that you've been very opinionated about Joe Quenneville and what you think of him and how he's mishandled his roster and decisions that he's made. I want to give you the floor. Maybe pick out a few things specifically that really bugged you this year and things that you'd like to see better from him going forward.
Boy, where do we start? There's enough here. This has been pointed out to me, and I wish I could remember who pointed this out to me, but my beef with his handling of Keith and Seabrook. Now, like, Keith and Seabrook are top pairing. They're going to get 25 minutes a night regardless. And that's the way you'd want it. You know, if you don't have a top pairing you can play 25 minutes a night, you're in a lot of trouble. So that leaves you, 35 minutes to divide between your other two pairs. And I just don't see where he ever tried to do that this year at all. So it's fine if Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook are skating a minute too much. It's not fine when Nick Leddy is. And you had, perfectly reasonable options on the third pair with Montador and Lepisto before, Montador got busy, that could have given you 15 minutes and not hurt anybody and not had the roof cave in. Yeah, would they make some mistakes? Yeah, would... Of course, the third pairing defenseman, as a middle relief of your hockey team, like, it's not going to be perfect. And that could have saved so much about that. But he kept giving us John Scott and telling us how important John Scott was, and then telling us that John Scott sucked because he played him 3 minutes a night. And you just, for games that didn't require any of that. And you don't need that. I mean, those minutes pile up. And it's just the inconsistency. I mean, Stahlberg would get benched for belching, and Andrew Shaw was playing over 20 minutes a night, his third game in the NHL. I mean, that doesn't work, does it? And if he's watching anything about the Rangers or, the Capitals, or especially the Kings, is you got to have contributions from your fourth line, and Quenneville just opted not to have one by always having Scott or Bolig on it. And then, not playing the other winger, whoever it was that given night. In that playoff series against Phoenix, there was an option there to finally move Sharp back to center, which I feel like I'm just going to be screaming on my deathbed at this point, and having Stahlberg and Kruger on your fourth line. Now, that's not because I thought Stahlberg and Kruger had just been so terrible and demoted, but it gives you four lines you can roll out there and eventually expose the bottom ends of the Phoenix defense, and they just didn't do it. And that's, those are my complaints with ice time. And the power play and the penalty, look, everyone's been over that, but, you can't ignore that. That's there. That's damning evidence for the coaching job that he did. And those are just my beefs right off the top of my head.
Yeah, you know, I talked a little bit about the power play last week, but, you know, it stands to be pointed out. The Blackhawks, as far as being shorthanded this year, penalty kill, they were 26th in the league.
They sucked on that, too. And if Haviland's standing on that, then, you know, you could easily fire him over that. So,
yeah,
that's
27th, actually. I was looking at the wrong sheet. 27th in the league on the PK. And mind you, there was only one team in the league that was shorthanded fewer times than the Blackhawks. So this isn't a case of a penalty kill being overworked. This is a case of very good hockey players not performing on their PK. And, you know, I don't know. Sam, I know you watch a lot of hockey. I watch a lot of hockey. I don't see too many different variations of penalty kills out there. And I can't really blame the penalty kill too much on coaches. And that PK just has to be better next year. Otherwise,
say this. It's hard to have a good PK when your goaltending sucks. There's not a magic system that will make up for poor goaltending, which is what the Hawks had for most of the year. That said, you know, most penalty kills look the same, but the difference is in aggressiveness. And there were just too many times where the Hawks on the PK, especially with all the speed and talent they boast on their penalty kill, it just looked far too passive. Like, point men had all day to gather the puck off the board, you know, get it onto their forehand, and take a look. And for me, you know, until they're actually, I mean, you've got to be in his face immediately because you've got recovery speed. Now, I get it. You can be pulled out of position that way. But when I watch the Kings or the Flyers, who aren't boasting anyone on the penalty kill, the Hawks can't. You know, and they're so aggressive and just close down space and time on the kill all the time. And I wonder why the Hawks don't do that, because especially with as much offensive talent as they have on there, if you can get these defense point men on their heels, knowing that the Hawks can easily make a break the other way count, you can really disrupt some things. I mean, everyone's running, a box or, you know, a point or whatever. But in degrees of aggressiveness, I think the Hawks could be a lot better, and I don't know why that never changed. I mean, the last game against Phoenix was a perfect example. Keith Yandle had all day to get a puck that was rimming around the board, get it to his forehand on the right point, walk into it because the two forwards were just kind of staring at him. And that's what I'd like to see addressed.
All right, well, since you brought it up, Sam.
Here we go. I'm going to hoist myself on my own petard.
Let's wrap this up with this. I posed this to Al last week, and I'll wrap this with you. The Blackhawks, for some reason, decided, I don't know if you could call it jump the gun, but they decided to re-up Ray Emery.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation in the middle of the series where Corey Crawford had a couple of so-so games after the game. Media went to Joe Quenneville and asked him about his goaltending, who he was coming back with the next night. And he gave us an answer, which was basically, I don't know, which in the regular season, when you know Coach Quenneville speak, basically means I'm going with the other guy.
Yeah.
He said, I don't know. We'll see. We'll evaluate that tomorrow. I forget which game. But he then came back with Corey Crawford, which says to me that when – you know, use the verbiage, when the chips were down, when it meant everything, he knew he couldn't rely on Ray Emery. Now, Ray Emery is your backup goaltender next year, unless somebody beats him out spectacularly for that spot. Corey Crawford is in that number one, that dreaded number one spot at the beginning of the year for the Blackhawks.
Right.
Hasn't worked out well for some guys that have come through Chicago being the number one guy at the beginning of the year, especially under Joe Quenneville.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Blackhawks need to upgrade their goaltending?
Yes. I don't know. I am all for giving Corey Crawford the number one job to start the season. You know, we have a very good rookie year. We have a blippy sophomore year. He's hardly the first goalie to ever go through that. I don't think he's Steve Mason. I don't know that he's Jimmy Howard either, but I'm pretty sure he's not Steve Mason. I'm basing that off, you know, the last 6 weeks of the season where he, maybe he wasn't great, but he was a hell of a lot more solid than he'd been for most of the
But you give him that number one job, but you've got to have someone in the backup role who, if he does turn out, if he is going right back to this year's performance, someone you can turn the reins over to and not feel bad about it. And I didn't disagree with anything the Hawks did with their goaltending in the playoffs, and I can't believe I'm going to do this, but, you know, Mike Milbury said it best, Ray Emery can get you one win. He couldn't get you three. And so even after the two bad overtime goals, going to Ray Emery would not have won the Hawks this series. He might have won Game 5 just as Corey Crawford did, but he wasn't going to hold him out for Game 6 and 7. We know this pretty well. So if that's what Ray Emery is, like, Ray Emery is a great backup for an absolute chisel and stone number one. Corey Crawford isn't that yet, and I think they need to if they can. I don't, you know, again, we're talking with cab numbers here, but they need. I would have not re-signed Emery, and I would have said Crawford's still a starter, but I'm going to go out and find a backup who, if he has to, you know, take over here and we're just going to leave Crawford on the bench, we can do that. I don't know who that is. I haven't really looked at the free agent goalie list. Please don't say Tim Thomas to anywhere near me. But that's what I would have done. And maybe that's what they're going to do. But they can't think that Ray Emery is going to be able to take over. They might not even get out of Ray Emery next year what they got this year, which is two stretches of pretty solid hockey when Crawford was really fit and fit. I don't know that you can even count on that again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, but, I mean, the free agent crop of goaltenders this year is kind of highlighted by whoever thinks they could get one more year out of Thomas Vokoun, which you're not going to get probably, and whoever's still high on Jonas Gustafsson, the monster. That's
Josh
pretty much
Harding,
it.
Right? He's out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're basically looking at Ottawa's probably going to trade Craig Anderson. In fact, I expect it. I think that that's a guy. And again, they haven't set out their cards that way, but I think that that would be a perfect guy, a guy that would push. I mean, Craig Anderson's not young anymore, so I don't think in any situation he should be handed anything. I think Craig Anderson is the perfect example at this stage of his career of a guy who, you know, can get a nice payday, but you would say to him, you're going to have to battle for this spot. And I think wherever he goes, that's exactly what he's going to have to do. Even if he stays put in Ottawa, that's what he's going to have to do. I think he'd be the perfect guy to, you know, and again, that's not the way they've stacked these cards, but he'd be the perfect guy, I think, to come in. You know, he's got the Chicago connection, obviously. He's minus the 1S since he's been here. But he's got, you know, he could push Corey Crawford. And I guess where I'm going with this, I think Corey Crawford's better when he is pushed.
Yeah. Not handed something. That's totally fair. I mean, you know, Josh Harding is, I think, that guy too, but you're not going to get Josh Harding to sign anywhere that he's not going to automatically start. You know, he's not going to come here to push Corey Crawford unless he just has no offers anywhere else. So, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I think they should do, but then what are they going to do with Ray Emery?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Carter Hutton will be resigned. Carter Hutton will be in that mix. Because Hutton's he's still an RFA, so they'll bring him back. To me, and I like Carter Hutton a lot, but I just don't have that comp. He's not, you know, we talk about no less, no more. I think, I mean, who knows? I mean, he could be the next Tim Thomas for all, minus the, you know, what Sam Feld doesn't like about him. But, you know.
There are plenty of on-ice things I don't like about Tim Thomas, too. I'm not saying don't sign Tim Thomas because he's a whack job. You know, that's fine. Most goalies are, but, like.
I think Carter Hutton probably starts next year in the minors if he certainly will be signed to do that. And if he, you know, starts the first half of the year like he finished this year, and Ray Emery falters, then certainly he'll be up in Chicago. But I don't think, to me, Carter Hutton's not, you know, he's really not spectacular. And the two things that he does very, very well, he knows where he is in his crease, and he sees pucks through traffic. I don't know if he sees through pucks at the NHL level as he does at the AHL level, but because he's not that athletic, and he's not that big.
Well, neither is Corey Crawford, to be honest. I mean,
but Corey Crawford's a big guy.
He's a big guy. Like, that's. This has been my beef with Corey Crawford's play this year, is he was trying to play the game of an athletic goalie, and A, he's not built for it, and B, he doesn't have to. You know, so I think they eventually figured that out. But, you know, Corey Crawford doesn't have to be leaving his crease and challenge shooters 3-5 feet outside the crease. He just doesn't need to. So, you know, we'll see. I think the re-signing of Emery and the re-signing of Kurt Ziller, they're just odd and strange. And you know, we'll see.
All right, Sam, are Kings going all the way?
No. I'm maybe it's just because I'm rooting for this, but the numbers sort of bear out that a low seed can make it to the finals, but they don't often win it. So this is why I'm sort of clinging to the Rangers winning the cup, just because they're the last high seed left, you know, depending on the Flyers. Devils things works out, and history is littered with teams who got there but couldn't quite get over the hump, and I think that's how it plays out. I think they beat Phoenix, but I would see them losing to the Rangers, and the only reason I say that is just because. So,
I know, it's kind of, Philadelphia, LA would, for television and storyline purposes, would be the perfect final.
Right,
but
I can't stand the Flyers, and I don't want them anywhere near my final. So, and I actually love the Flyers team. It's the fandom I could probably do without, but I said after the first round I want to be Kings Rangers, and that's what I want because I want to know that I spent 6 months watching that regular season and it meant something. You know, like the Rangers were pretty much the best team, at least in the East. I thought they were the best team in the NHL for most of the year, and I want to know that all was for a purpose. Like, if I'm watching the Kings and Devils, well, then why did I spend 6 months watching regular season hockey? And don't tell me because I have no life. You know, like, what was the purpose of all that? Like, I have to believe it means something. So that's part of the reason I'm on the Rangers bandwagon. And, you know, I don't see the Rangers getting pushed around by the Kings as much as other teams have. And they have the front line scoring that the Blues don't. And the Coyotes don't, and they have just as good a goalie as LA does. So I think it'd be a great series, be great for television, and I hope that's how it goes.
All right, Sam, before I let you go, I want to make note that we will be back, not you, Sam, unless you want to. and I know the answer already.
I think it's McClure's turn from SDH whenever.
I absolutely adore McClure, and I am going to get him on this summer, and we're just going to let him loose. I'm going to put my feet up. I'm going to turn my microphone on mute, and I'm just going to let him go. Next week, I don't know exactly what time and when, but next week the plan is to talk Rockford IceHogs hockey in depth and more about prospects all over the globe. So we'll be doing that next week. Sam, again, you have one less thing for me to plug. I don't know if you want to rant and rave about that, but the Committed Indian, which, of course, is
right.
Summer.
We'll be back in September. I think I'll probably do a training camp issue this year again. So keep an eye out at the end of summer for that. Maybe we'll even do a free agency draft wrap-up. I haven't decided yet. You know, it's my thing. I can do whatever I want.
Exactly.
So.
And secondcityhockey.com. How's everybody doing over there? Is Blackhawk Nation, are they calmed down yet?
No. They should, for most part, a majority of our readers, you know, I love them to death, and they're pretty level-headed. But you're never gonna eliminate the Chicken Little faction, and then everything is everything. And oh my God, you know, they're the worst team ever. And you know, me and John at the Fifth Feather are kind of on the same place. This team doesn't need as much as everyone thinks it does. So let's just calm down.
All right, Sam, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. Again, secondcityhockey.com. You can find all your information out about the Committed Indian there, and we'll be back to insult you in the fall, or at least I will.
I can't wait, Chris. You know it's my thing.
All right, Sam, thank you very much, and we'll talk to everybody next week. Good night, everybody.